Hello and welcome to the British English Podcast, the show that helps you learn British culture and British English, especially if you're a non-native, learning how to, you know, use this wonderful language of ours. And this is episode 2, season 2, meaning it is an academy lesson. And that includes the exclusive explainer videos for all of the language that we use in this episode. I go deep into the analysis of all of them with full examples in context for you to feel really confident when applying them in your own life. We do quizzes, we do writing assignments, we do pronunciation practice. We do it all at the Academy. So if you want to join in, head over to the BritishEnglishPodcast.com. And today, I've got an interesting guest on the show. I have a guy who is currently living in Japan, but he is a Brit. He is a Brit abroad, and he goes by the name of Chris, and he has a fantastic channel on YouTube and a podcast called Abroad in Japan. Hello, Chris. How are you doing?
Good morning, Charlie. I'm very good here from snowy North Japan. It's very cold at the moment. I feel like I'm in a postcard, a picture postcard for some sort of Christmas setting. It's rather beautiful, but very, very cold. Very different, I imagine, to where you are as well.
Wow. Yeah, that is really different. I'm on the southern hemisphere at the moment in Sydney. And yeah, it's the peak of the summer. We've got a heat wave coming, about 40 degrees around the corner. So you've got snow. And that immediately makes me think, I know it's very boring to ask this, but a lot of my students talk about it. Do you get heating in Japan? Is it normal to have good heating like in Britain?
We don't have kind of central heating here. I'm not sure why that is. I've got like an air conditioning unit, and all through summer it's on air conditioning mode. And then sometime around like late October, you sort of switch it over to heating mode because the temperature sort of turns in the space of a day from hot and humid to freezing cold and snowy. So no, it's just an air conditioning unit. And you might be able to hear in the background in my room, I've got a little fan heater going as well. So right. No radiators, no central heating. Houses here are not overly well insulated. So
right.
It's a strange thing.
Yeah.
Futuristic country. Bad heating.
This episode comes with a free worksheet over on the website, thebritishenglishpodcast.com. So grab that and you can listen along whilst using it. Well, I've heard, I've heard about this futuristic, like, expectation of the country, but my Japanese students, they say it's not actually completely true nowadays. Can you enlighten me on whether that's true or not?
I think Japan is very good at hardware stuff. So Japan was always ahead with electronics, right? And things that require mechanical components, like a bullet train. The bullet train came out here in the late 1960s, I believe, while we only have one in the UK that came out about 10 years ago. I find with Japan, there is a lot of old technology, like fax machines. We still have fax machines here. People really? Use them. I don't remember what they were. I think when I was being raised in the 90s, even then they were sort of phased out and they're a bit outdated. But no, they still use fax machines here. Smartphones took a long time to become smart. It's a very strange thing. I don't know why it is, but I think Japan has a fascination for handmade things. They like mechanical sort of engineering and they like that aspect of things. But when it comes to software, they're very much behind. So the sort of digitization of things took a long time to finally take off in Japan. Only in the last few years has the country sort of got to the same point that countries like South Korea or even the UK have been at for quite a while. And also because they have such an extensive writing system of 2,200 characters, people like to do a lot of handwriting here so they can remember it, right? So I think that's been another reason there's been a slow transition. The country has so rooted in these ways that it's been difficult to move forward to the era or sort of the internet digital age and digitization. But it's getting there. Although the fax machines are still here, sadly. Don't know how to use them.
That's funny. That is fascinating, though, and that makes sense and aligns with what my students have been saying, how it's the software that's outdated or not updated, and the hardware, yeah, that came out a long time ago ahead of the game. So let's just let people know. So you are British. Where were you born and bred?
So I'm from Kent, which is just outside of London, about 45 minutes. And it's a little town called Maidstone. I don't really know what Maidstone has or what the history is. I think it's the first place they invented chlorinated tap water, but I need to check that. I've been raised sort of in the countryside of the UK, and
with very cleanly water,
not a whole lot. With very clean water indeed, Charlie. but not a lot else. That's pretty much it.
No cholera for you.
No cholera for me. Just good, easy access to London in 45 minutes and chlorinated water. What more could you want?
Nothing more, really. So you've obviously experienced the UK, and then you've gone over to another island nation. And I think I got you on here for two reasons. Three, actually. One because I saw that the most listens come from Japan for this podcast, which is very interesting. Two, because we met before and we enjoyed making content together with Natsuki. That was hilarious. And then three, because you are in the situation where you can compare. Because when I ask these kind of questions to British people who have lived in the UK, it's hard for them to know any different, and therefore they don't really know what to say. But given your situation, you might be able to be like, oh, well, that is different. And these guys have this, whereas we have that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sounds good to me. It's crazy to think it's been 3 or 4 years since we made those videos together. For those listeners that don't know, Charlie appeared on my YouTube channel and actually taught my good friend Natsuki how to speak English in preparation for his trip, his first ever trip to Europe. And he did a great job, Charlie, with the hand you were dealt. Natsuki, he knows a lot of English words, but his grammar wasn't so great. So it was really great you were able to teach him, and it really did prepare him for his trip to London and to Croydon. So thank you for that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I remember he enjoyed learning the phrase, the dog's bollocks. Did he use it?
He did. He still uses it today. He remembered that. It's impressive stuff. He loves it. Fantastic. Every sentence, he sticks it in somewhere, and rather inconveniently.
Nice.
It worked.
Yeah. So going back to what you were talking about, would you say that the UK is quite far ahead with their software and their development of technology?
I think so. I do think the UK is further ahead when it comes to the internet and the digital age. I think if you go on a Japanese website, even now, it looks like somebody designed the website in 1994. It's really quite bad, and I have a lot of problems. And most people admit, including my Japanese friends, that Japanese websites are not good. The vast majority. So we lead on that front. But when it comes to certain types of technology, yeah, Japan is ahead, like robots, for example, robot technology, robotics, transport. I think I still find it incredible that that Japan's had bullet trains since the late 60s, and there's never been a single fatality as a result of an accident on a bullet train to this day, which is phenomenal. So, yeah, Japan is ahead in a lot of ways. It's a difficult one, really. It's not a clear-cut thing. But I think a lot of people are impressed and surprised when they find it's not this magical wonderland, this technological wonderland that it's often made out to be.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, obviously a lot more complicated than saying software and hardware. But, interesting. So when you went to Japan, what year did you go out there?
I arrived here in August 2012 to be an English teacher.
2012. Okay, you started the journey like me. Nice. So about 8-9 years ago, do you remember any particular things that really shocked you in comparison to the UK, or that still, you know, are significantly different in your day-to-day experience?
I think just communication was very different. Like in Japan, people are more reserved in their opinions. They're far more indirect. They won't just state their opinion. And they're very, very polite, at the risk of causing confusion. Like, I remember I arrived at the local airport in North Japan where I was going to start teaching English, and I sort of walked through the gate, and there were three English teachers from my future school that were standing there to meet me. And they sort of said, hello, how was your trip? And I remember just sort of saying, oh, it was a great trip. I was really long flight. I'm really tired, really hungry. I just sort of slurred my words and spoke in my kind of native Kent accent really quickly. And they all sort of nodded along. And I just remember, we then went to a cafe and I kept talking and nobody said anything. And they just sort of kept nodding along as I spoke for 20 minutes about my journey to Japan and how hot I was because it was summer and it was humid and I was jet lagged. And then after 20 minutes of silence on their part, one of them just sort of said, could you speak slower? We don't know what you're saying. And I sort of set the tone for the next 3 years of teaching that I realized I had to speak a bit slower and enunciate my words more clearly and not sort of be myself and speak the same sort of colloquial way that I was accustomed to. So that was one thing. But like, I feel like if that was the UK, right off the bat, they might have just said, sorry, can you speak a bit slower? I can't hear everything you're saying. But yes. Because it's Japan, they sort of were very polite and they let me just talk for 20 minutes and they kept nodding and pretending like they knew what I was saying when they clearly didn't.
Yeah.
So being polite and trying to save face, okay. That was one aspect of it.
And that is interesting because I've got students from all different cultures, and like the Russians, the Germans, and even sometimes the Brazilians, they find us reserved. And then I guess Japan is on the even further down the spectrum of reserved or being polite. You feel like the UK is our norm, and then you got to Japan and it was just shockingly polite, right?
Absolutely. I think, Japan, from my experience, I did study intercultural sort of discourse at university, and I found then that Japan was the most polite culture in the world if you measure by sort of indirectness. But it can be a problem, and it can be annoying if you're making a mistake or doing something wrong. Sometimes they won't tell you until it's too late, and you have those sort of situations. But for the most part, it's nice. I've lived here 8 years, and I haven't seen a single fight or altercation. I don't think I've ever really seen an argument in public, just because people here are far more polite and reasonable, and they don't lose their temper. And that's something that I think we could do with a lot more in the West, to be honest.
Yeah.
Calm, collective mindset. Yeah. Politeness.
So if a Japanese person was to go to the UK, and maybe Kent, and they went out for a night, would they experience any altercations?
I don't think so. I think even my most outspoken friend, who is Natsuki, who you've met, he sees himself as a bit of a rebel in Japan, but... by the standards of the UK, he's still very nice, and I'm sure he'd be very great and polite. And so I think a Japanese person going to the UK would have a good time, and I think British people would enjoy talking to them because there isn't that many Japanese people living in the UK. I certainly remember I've only met Japanese folks mainly in London when I lived back in the UK, so they're a rarity, but. We certainly do have a fascination with the country and fascination with the people. So I think it would go very well if you go to Japan, if you go to the UK, sorry.
Yeah.
As a Japanese person.
So that's a very good point. So you have built a company around the idea of Westerners being interested in the culture of Japan. So for Japanese people to go to the UK, perhaps, that kind of shows that we are really interested in them, right?
Absolutely, yeah, I think so. And I think every time I speak to a person in the UK and I sort of say, oh, I live in Japan, or I do videos in Japan, they always say, oh, I'd love to go there. I really want to go to Japan. I want to go. But I think we never do, just because Japan feels like a very faraway place. Mm. If you look on a map, it's on the other side of the world, and it takes a lot of time and money to get there, and it's not going to be much of a holiday, is it? And I think Japanese people might feel the same. Most people in Japan, when they want to go on holiday, they just go to somewhere in the country because it's so stressful to travel to the other side of the world and where you can't speak the language. So it's the same with the UK. Everyone seems to have a fascination with Japan. Everybody wants to go, but they don't. So one thing I've tried to do over the years, by doing YouTube is try and encourage people to do it. Get on the plane and go for it, because it will be an incredible, life-changing, potentially life-changing experience that you'll deeply treasure. And I say that to Japanese friends as well, that they can have a lot of fun in the UK.
Oh, fantastic message. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Yeah, yeah, really nice. And have you had many friends come over to Japan from the UK?
I have, yeah. I've had a fair few, and I sort of take them around. There's certain places in Japan that you always take people. Tokyo, Kyoto, Hiroshima. Often they call it the Golden Route because it's so popular with tourists. Because they say if you come to Japan, you should always see Tokyo, the sort of bustling heart of Japan, and then Kyoto, the more traditional soul of Japan. And then so you kind of have those sort of places you always take people, and yeah, they love it. I've never had a friend come to Japan who didn't really enjoy it and didn't want to come back. So I think that's very positive. Yeah. I think that's positive.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. So I asked you about the culture shocks when you got there, or that you experience now, and you were mentioning them, and then I distracted you with something else. Did you have another one that you wanted to talk about?
I think there is a really interesting part of the culture called chinmoku, which means silence. And what this took me a while to grasp, but the first day I arrived at my school, and I was very jet lagged, very tired, very bloody dehydrated at the time, given I'd flown from London to Tokyo, Tokyo to Yamagata, this northern prefecture in Japan. And then I was kind of ushered into a room with the school principal and had a meeting. And we sort of sat down and had a short conversation. He was like, where are you from? And where are you from in the UK? And why did you come to Japan? And we had some tea. And then he just sort of sat in silence for about, what, well, must have been about 60 seconds. As I sort of sat there awkwardly sipping my tea, not quite knowing what was going on. And I thought I'd done something wrong. I thought maybe I'd offended him. Maybe my manners were bad in this really polite culture that I'd still yet to understand. And then he sort of said, well, it's been great talking. Good luck. And I'm sure we'll speak to each other in the coming days. And I left the room. And it later transpired that it's just a part of the culture that we don't have in the UK, this concept of sitting in silence, chinmoku. I think to be in silence is incredibly awkward, right, in the West. If you sit in a room with someone in that sort of scenario you've just met and you sit in silence, it's deeply uncomfortable. You think you've done something wrong. But it is a big part of Japanese culture, where a sort of collectivist society where people don't say their opinions outright. You sort of often have that. And when I used to go into meetings with the Department of English, and all the 11 English teachers I worked with would sit at a big table, someone would say something, they would all sit in silence for like 20 seconds, and then someone else would speak, and then there'd be another 15, 20 seconds, which feels like an eternity, right, in that sort of environment. But it's just the way people reach a consensus. Rather than just throw your opinions out there, people like to gradually reach a consensus so they don't step out of line and kind of step away from the group think. And really fascinating part of the culture. But even now, I still feel a little bit awkward when it happens, though I've kind of lived here a long time and encountered chinmoku and silence quite a lot over the years. Something I've failed to embrace and do myself.
Have you ever tried to meditate or do mindfulness kind of things before?
I did. Yeah, I mean, I did go to a Buddhist temple, do Zen Buddhist training, did some zazen, which is where you sort of sit in silence and the Buddhist monk chants and then hits you over the head with a stick. I think that's sounds a bit more violent. It's not that violent. He does sort of come behind you and tap you on the shoulder rather firmly. That's the closest I've come to that. That was kind of fun, sitting in the temple doing that. But it's not something people do here often.
But
true Buddhist.
I quite like doing that, and I forget to do it, and I should do it more. But that it kind of sounds like they're doing that in their daily habit of communicating. Yes. They're kind of being mindful with everything, and they're not just, you know, doing verbal diarrhea until they leave each other. They're thinking about it properly, and then they're making their move or they're deciding what to say. That's a great way to do a meeting. Everyone should do that.
It is, and it has pros and cons. The pros are people reach a consensus, and people have their views heard and the consensus is reached a bit more organically. Whereas in the UK, we'd sort of just shout, this is what I think and this is why we should do it. At the same time, I do think we get things done quicker sometimes as a result in the West. You know, we get things done quicker and people are more willing to debate. For example, debates weren't really a thing in Japan. And they've only been introduced into schools in the last 20, 30 years, I think. I remember I used to run debates and it was a very foreign concept, this concept of speaking out your mind and being a bit blunt and pushing back against people. Only in recent years has that sort of kicked off in Japan, I feel.
Huh. Yeah, again, amazing. Yeah, there is such a different culture for them. Mm. It makes so much sense why your channel is, you have so much content to do, because they are two worlds apart.
Absolutely, yeah. There's always something new to learn, right? There's always a new aspect of the culture to dig into and to try and understand why it's like that. And I find that absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I did write some questions down for you, and I thought that it might be nice to ask you, if you were to make a little a child country of, of Japan and the UK getting together, what do you think would be part of it? And, you know, what would you say would be good to take from this? This is a child that is wanted. It's a loved child, and it's not an accident. So we want all the good things. We don't want all the unwanted DNA in there. Any thoughts?
Unwanted DNA. That's a really good question. So sort of the best bits of Japanese culture and the best bits of British culture, right?
Yeah.
Combined into one super child.
So we go on to talk about this super child of Japan and the UK in part two of the show, which is available on the website, thebritishenglishpodcast.com, where you can also enjoy part one, two, and three with the transcripts, the extended glossaries, and flashcards as a premium podcast member, which I would like to add is incredibly affordable. And as I mentioned, this is a seasonal episode, meaning it is part of the Academy, where I have created exclusive explainer videos and audios diving deep into the usage of the native expressions being used between me and Chris. And then I've also made interactive quizzes, a pronunciation practice lesson of all the hard to say vocabulary in the show, and many more things that I will leave for you to find out about if you are interested. There's even a complimentary free sample lesson of this academy for you to try. You'll get 60 expressions for free in that sample, and then you can see if it's something you think would benefit your English studies in the long term. But if you're not interested in that right now, then grab the free worksheet that includes a handful of lovely expressions from this part of the episode over on thebritishenglishpodcast.com. Anyway, that is amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciated it. Hope you enjoyed telling the world about your pearls of wisdom of comparison of Japanese culture and British culture. It was fascinating to listen to. So, yeah, thank you very much, Chris.
It's been good to chat again, Charlie. I hope we chat again before 3 years next time.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. And so for listeners who haven't heard of you or your content, where could they go to get more of you?
Head over to YouTube and look up Abroad in Japan. It's a channel with about 2 million subscribers. Been going for 8 years now. And if you want to learn about any aspect of Japanese culture, odds are we've covered it in a video at some point. And be sure to go back and check out the video with Charlie in. Teaching English to my good friend Natsuki. It's utterly hilarious. And I think the video was called Japanese Man Prepares to Go to Europe. And it was about 3 or 4 years ago, but unmissable content, unmissable video.
Brilliant. All right. Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you guys for listening. And I'll see you next week on the British English Podcast.